to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Matt Weber in assistance on the board. He's got all kinds of people now, this Matt Weber guy. S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 85. Dow futures down 133. We were up 8 last night, up 8 or 9. So we've sunk here because a little bit of fallout on this Huawei. Some of the companies here in this country are stopping supplying them kind of as of this week. Interesting to see how that works out. We have a hey Frank, how are you, bud?
Good. How are you?
All right. Were you the guy who engineered this 27, almost 30 point flip in the market since the time I went to bed?
Actually, in the last 2 hours.
Well, this is all because of Huawei, or we never really know what it's all about. But we're supposed to come up with a reason. That's why we're on the air, right?
It's because our president called for economic patriotism on our part. We're supposed to buy American.
Ah.
I will when he does.
Yeah, I will when he does.
Now, I try to, actually.
So do I. But then again, how do you really know the stuff you're buying American could be somewhere else? I mean, an Apple.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, if you buy Apple, you're not buying American, right? Even though it's an American company. Right.
Well, it was like on Saturday Night Live, I hate to quote them. No, I don't. But Michael Che on Weekend Update said, you're never really sure what's made in America. And he had a Made in America tag, and he goes, I'm willing to bet this was made in China.
Yeah, yeah. What's assembled in America, something in America, whatever. Although it is interesting, a lot of the clothing... we actually export the cotton for the blue jeans, and then the blue jeans come back over here. You would think that somehow or another you could do it easier here instead of having to ship stuff twice. And it just would seem like, obviously I would be wrong on that because people do ship the cotton and ship the blue jeans back, but, it sure would seem like it would be easier to assemble them here, wouldn't it? Instead of shipping them twice? I don't know. Obviously
I
not.
I have no idea. It would seem that way. It's probably dependent more on the price of oil than anything else.
Well, maybe. Those size of those ships now, have you seen some of those new ones? They're like a city block. Some of them have, 2,500? Or how many thousand containers do they have on them? It's incredible.
It is totally incredible. But, yeah, I have no idea what's going on here. Could it be Iran, the trade war? I was surprised we were up 10 points last night after the New York Times report on the Deutsche Bank employees who were told that nothing was happening with strange fund transfers with Kushner and Trump.
Yeah, well, I think we're sort of beyond that, Frank. When I say beyond it, certainly not beyond listening to it, but I really think that, there's a tone change since Joe Biden has entered the race. That we're not focusing on any of that stuff. We're just focusing on the next election and let's talk about it. Let's just beat the guy. I'm kind of surprised how strong he's come in. I would never have guessed that. Can't say he's ever been, seems to me, he's never been, never didn't like the guy. I just never thought he, but then again, there's a lot of, vice presidents didn't do anything. I mean, Harry Truman was certainly a talented guy, and Roosevelt never had him in a meeting.
Truman was a haberdasher.
Yeah.
He sold men's suits. Yeah. So, I think he did just fine. And he was the product of a very strong and corrupt political machine.
Yeah. I remember reading, he was a big focus of George Marshall. And he was saying that he was one of the few guys that during the, his job, wherever he was he finance committee at the, he was something at the, in the Senate, and, they said he would routinely get the generals in there and want to know how much they paid for stuff, and did they pay too much, and Marshall said all the other generals were always couldn't stand the guy because he actually would hold their feet to the fire and what they were buying and all the stuff. And he said, he goes, it never bothered me because that is the role of Congress in a democracy. He goes, it's not, if you were a general, being a general fighting a war in a democracy probably wouldn't be your first choice. in terms of freedom to do what you needed to do as a general, at least so you thought so. He said, but by and large, it worked fine. It might have been took a little time out of your week that you thought was a waste. But the fact is, having that discipline on top of you, he said, was not exactly, wasn't horrible. Didn't stop them from being generals, type of thing. So but some guys just absolutely, recoiled at it. What are these guys that, we're in a war here, man. We're fighting. What are these guys doing? Tell me, how many of these, do I really need to pay this much for this plane when somebody else got it cheaper type of thing? Harry Truman was, I guess, very big at that. and had the personality to pull it off, evidently. I mean, he looked like a little accountant, but, anyway, Frank, we should probably talk a little bit this morning. I don't know, maybe because I was thinking about it this weekend. It's funny how, I think everybody on the show probably knows that I'm a money manager, and I do that for a living. I own a brokerage firm, and we have a investment advisor firm as well. And we specialize in having protected portfolios. Now, if somebody doesn't want that and just wants to be long in the market, I think I can do it as well, cheaper than most people. Anyway, having said that, it is interesting, Frank. We've talked like forever, not just you, but other days of the week, about one of the dangers in this market is because the Fed has kept these rates where they are probably too long, foolishly, in my mind, but they have. That you have people, and it doesn't matter where the market's going. It has nothing to do with whether I think the market's going up, down, or anywhere. That's totally out of the question. So it's not like the chief guy thinks we're going down and is trying to sell me something. That has nothing to do with it. It has to do with, in the last 10 years, and all the stuff that you see, if you went 10 years ago to, God help you, Merrill Lynch's of the world, and they would fit you into the whether you were a square piece, they'd fit you in the round hole, and you get that little pizza pie thing, and see, Frank's 75, he's not working, he has no intention of working, he's got this dough, by the way, it's his entire, there's no pension, there's whatever, and you would spit out with this, who knows who did it, but it'd come out, 40, 45, 50% in stock at age 75, maybe a little less, right? Probably 40% in, fixed income of some kind, nothing, all of them, I wouldn't say any junk, probably all pretty well rated, and probably 20% in cash. Somewhere in there, right? This is cash back when you got 2.5, 3% on your cash, even in a brokerage firm, maybe even 3.5. And I'm gonna say that would be the, quote, typical portfolio, not that, Now, somebody like me comes along and says, wait a minute, you could actually be longer in stocks or bonds or whatever. You can overweight. And because of my ability and other people's, but I'm pretty good at it, I can hedge you. You can actually be a little bit more in stocks or be a little more in bonds if you want to be. And I can take that risk component out of it a little bit. No, at a price. Not for free, but at a price. And if you want to, we can hang in there. We can do that. Okay, now, but forget all that. But now here we are where people are getting so used to, I'm 75, I'm 95% in stock. You go, hell man, you ain't getting nothing in the bank. And these bonds, nobody wants these bonds, they're not paying crap. So I'm just 95% in stock. And oh, by the way, the Fed's got my back and we got this new president. God, he's the best. All he cares about is the market. And he's going to make sure that the market goes up and blah, blah, blah. And I'm good to go. And by the way, if I go to Merrill Lynch now, who's all in on this, I got 95% in cash at Merrill Lynch, in stocks. And I'm with Big Cat Bob and Mid Cat Mike, and they're making me money. Well, let me help you. Big Cat Bob and Mid Cat Mike aren't making you a friggin' dime. They've got your money in the market. They're charging you to do it. And if the market goes up, they're heroes. And if not, they're not. Okay? They have there's nothing else though going on there. I mean, I'm being very blunt this morning. If you want to get long, guess what? You could drop $5 million here at PTI Securities and by 8:35, I can have you $5 million in the Qs, which gives you access to the other stuff. I can put you in three ETFs and you're just long, knock yourself out. You never have to call me again. Just look at your statements. Right, Frank? So the problem is not what people can do for you at a price. The problem is what should your thing be? And now, in the last year or so, Frank, it's interesting is I've gotten all kinds of calls and all of a sudden now a lot of people have decided to get, that they wanted to be, protected in some way or another. Now everything's different for different people, by and large, to essentially hedge your portfolio somehow or protect it. But it is interesting the calls you get where people just kind of aren't ready. Did you ever remember the trading floor where like people wanted to stop drinking or go on a diet? you'd get to January and it would be like, well, wait a minute, the Super Bowl's in January, February is a short month, let's focus on March. It is so scary. St. Patrick's Day is March, so let's figure out April. It is so scary when you get these calls from people, and they're terrific people. I mean, I'm not, but they'll say, you know, I'm thinking about maybe I'm way too much in stock. Well, by the way, how are you? Well, how old are you? You know, it doesn't matter. You know, 95, 85, whatever it is. Yeah, you know, well, do you have anything in cash? Well, no. Do you have anything in bonds? Well, no. It's all in stock. Well, does that make you nervous? Well, yeah, I never used to be stuff like that, but man, the market just goes up all the time. I don't want to miss anything. Okay, I mean, basically say that. Okay, fine. Well, so now, what can I do for you? I'm thinking maybe I need to get, like, protected. You know, okay. Why don't you send me a statement? I'll take a look. I'll see what you got. Blah, blah, blah. And spend some time. And then all of a sudden, you get the phone call again. And all of a sudden, you get a week where the market's up. Then you don't hear from anybody. And then all of a sudden, you'll call back and say, well, are we still talking about this? Well, yeah. And especially if yesterday was down. And, because then the president will come out and say something like, well, you know, the market's up because I'm president, and by the way, I'm going to win again. So something stupid like that. And, which, by the way, isn't stupid because most people, I mean, if you actually ran on the ticket as a senator, that while I'm in office, the market will do nothing but go straight up and you'll have more money when I leave. They wouldn't care if that guy was Attila the Hun. It really doesn't matter because no. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, if anybody actually thought somebody could do that. So then the best part is then you'll get a call saying, I really want to do this, blah, 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 blah. By the way, I'm coming to Chicago in like December. Why don't we meet? And I'll go, you know what? Call me in December. I'll be here. It's at a point, Frank, where you've heard this so often. You don't really want to go on the diet. You don't really want to change. You really just want to keep your money where it is and every year have it go up 15-16% and bitch at somebody because they didn't make 18. I mean, it's really what you want. And we've gotten so in tune to it that we don't realize that there's another side to this. That, you know, the things go both ways. And it has nothing to do with the market. It has to do with you and your particular situation. I don't think I've ever sensed more, maybe the dot-bomb era, where people got caught, but then it was different, Frank. People bought a stock when it was some percentage of their portfolio. Maybe they bought XYZ.bomb, and it was only 5% of their portfolio where they bought it. Then the thing, like, quadrupled in price to where it was 25-30% of their portfolio. And all this, and they refused to cut back on it. So it was a different type of overweighting or where you would never, or if you ever asked somebody, which I did in the day, by the way, Frank, I see you've got out of your $2 million account, you've got $1.5 million in that XYZ.bomb. Well, yeah, boy, that's been nothing but a winner, man. I put like 100 grand into it now and look at it. Well, God, it's great. It's the world's greatest investment. But you're kind of a little overweighted in there. Yeah, but it's the only one going up. I get that. But still, if I gave you $1.5 million today, would you run right out to the brokerage store, in a brokerage store, is that for a term, and buy $1.5 million of that? Well, hell no, but I got it. It does nothing like well. So there have been times where people get the wrong allocation. And here's the part that it's so hard to impress on people, Frank. It's not the wrong allocation because I think it's wrong. What I think doesn't matter. You think it's wrong. That's why you're here talking to me. We're talking about a diet because you looked in the mirror, right? I'm being a little harsh here this morning, but we're not here because I said you were a fatso. We're here because you said you were a fatso. So let's forget about whether I think you are or you aren't. You think you are. Am I right, Frank, or not?
You're exactly right. The human condition abhors change. That's just how we are.
Well, especially
I had a neighbor who was at about $1.2 billion on a stock, publicly traded stock of a company he owned. He goes, well, I can't hedge it yet because it's not listed stocks. I said, go to Goldman Sachs and ask them to hedge half of it. They'll write a put for you.
Yeah, they'll write a put for you.
And he goes, oh, well, he came back to me and he goes, I talked to him. You know how much they want? And he would have been, he ended up with maybe $30 million, you know, after it cratered. But he would have ended up with probably $500 million if he had just taken the deal with Goldman Sachs.
Oh, yeah. It's a, well, I mean, it, that some people, when you look at, put it this way, because sometimes when I've had clients, you know, where we sit down and we talk and they say, well, you know, the cost of the put protection, especially in an individual stock, not necessarily in, you know, the markets, although that goes up and down with the volatility for sure, the price of an individual stock, the puts are high. And they say, man, those puts are high. I can't pay that. I said, you know, it's sometimes the price of, quote, insurance is your best indication of how big the risk is. What are you talking about? I said, well, for instance, if you went out there and, you know, you guys got some dough, husband and wife. I said, if you went out and you walked into the Chevy Man dealer and you say, I want that Corvette. And the guy goes, sure, say the Corvette's $60,000. You guys can pop for that. I mean, I've seen your statements. Yeah, we can pop for that. I said, well, if you call your insurance guy and he goes, that new vet? We're talking $6,000 a year, $7,000 a year, $8,000 a year. And you're going to go, I'm not paying that for insurance. It's just BS. I said, well, maybe that's telling you, if you ever touch anybody with the darn thing, how much it costs to get it fixed. And, oh, by the way, you better chain it to the curb because everybody in the world is going to want it because everybody wants to steal the darn thing. You know, they're telling you through the price how, you know, when you got a stock that's $50, I'm just throwing numbers around, and you look at a put a year out, and the put's like $15. Well, isn't that a message, Frank? of where uh-huh. the rest of where it's not like this is too high. Those people are idiots. No, it's high because the market is there for a reason. You think you've got no risk in this $50 stock, and the rest of the investment world is telling you you got a lot of risk, right? Who are you going to believe? The reason why the put's high is because it is risky. I mean, what would a put used to be in a dot? I remember when United Airlines. You were here, 1989. United Airlines was supposedly going to take over Canada at $300. It got to like 285, 289, Frank, and like Thursday and Friday was an expiration Friday, and the deal was supposed to take place over the weekend, and yet every week that week, if out of all the things that I've ever seen in the business, the biggest layup was that deal falling apart. Because every week there'd be some, because United Airlines, obviously it was a Chicago corporation, and every week there'd be, you know, Matt Weber's investment firm, you know, and all the big old names in the time, gets out of their United stock. But they've owned United stock since 1938, and they puked it all out on Tuesday morning. And somebody else would be Wednesday morning, and somebody else would be Thursday morning. And I'm sitting there looking at this going, this ain't going to happen. Somehow or another, this is going to fall apart by this weekend. Yet Friday morning, the stock is like 289. I'm going to say, Frank, the 285 puts had to be like $40. And they expire 35 hours. Would they expire in 4 hours or 5 hours? I mean, you may have had this feeling like I did that, you know, you thought this thing might fall apart. But God forbid, the puts were what? 12, 15% of the price of the stock with 4 hours to go on the puts. So, I mean, one of two ways. Either if you own the stock, if you looked at the price of the puts, you'd say, really, an awful lot of people are betting that this thing's not going to happen this weekend. I should at least listen to this and think about selling some of my stock. I mean, if you'd own the stock, for you to not have sold it at 289, you're a blithering idiot. I mean, because it was right there for all to see. Yet, me having a feeling it might fall apart, I wasn't going to pay $40, Frank. I didn't have $40. Yeah, I mean, somebody came in and bought and sold, because I had one of my guys, Bob Bates, was in the pit at the time. He's trading United Airlines. And Bob did a nice job. He didn't make very much, but he didn't lose anything. So I was very proud of him. And somebody came in and sold like the 285 puts, Frank, for like $40, like several hundred of them. It was something like, it was like a $5 million ticket if you'd have taken the other side of it. But how could you buy all those puts with 4 hours to go at that price? And yet, if you did, you never had to work again, right? I mean, this whole concept of risk—it's not about whether you need to make sure that your stuff is correct for you. right?
Well, here's the difference between you and a outside investor, is you look at risk first. We had to stay in business until the next day.
Yep.
So we first we look at risk. They are reward focused, and that differential dichotomy controls the behaviors of them and us.
Well, plus, I think the investment public honestly believes that they have people in government and in office, and I'm not saying they don't, that are very prone to try and reward them through their stock investments, and that somehow they're able to do it over a long period of time. I mean, there's people that I know that are exceptionally well-educated that are $35, $38 are absolutely convinced. There was a guy, he was on CNBC, the guy owns this company. The guy is drop-dead brilliant. He was from, you know, if I was Trump, I'd say he was a fuzzy foreigner, but I'm not. Looked like he might have been Iranian, but he grew up here. Anyway, brilliant guy. And he owns this company, and he said, well, in my mind, now he's been an investor and an owner for 10 years. I'm jealous. He owns a big company in 10 years. I mean, that's great of him. He goes, I don't worry about these things because in this day and age, we're essentially recession-proof and market correction-proof because the Fed will just pour more money in. I go, wow. Some in your lifetime, buddy, I hope you got to put somewhere. Because do we really? I mean, this went on in the late 60s where we're going to fine-tune the economy and we got the whiz kids in office. I mean, we'll never have a bad thing happen again. How many bad things have happened between now and the 60s? I mean, the difference is I just don't trust these guys. Now, if everybody else seems to, you know, and by the way, for the last certain number of years, they've been right. But, you know, markets going like decades sort of things. There's been decades where the market did nothing but do great and decades where it didn't do so bad. But the point is, it all comes down to you. I mean, if somebody gives, I keep using Matty Weber as, we have to use Jack or his assistant because Jack's younger. You know, if you're 20 years old and uncle gives you, you know, $1 million and you just leave it in stocks, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, Frank. Problem is, most of the people who call me and the people you and I know are not 20 years old. I mean, somewhere along the line, I mean, the $1 million that Jack gets might be 900, 800, might even be 700, but I'm going to guess that 30 years from now, $1 million is going to be okay. You know, maybe we're a little high now, might even think about hedging a little bit here, but say it in. It's all about you and time horizon. It's not about whether me or Big Cap Bob or anybody else thinks the market's going up versus down and how you're going to miss out. It's all about you. And it's hard to convey that to people sometimes. Just saying.
It's very hard. And the 2000s were horrible for anybody that had stocks.
Well,
Quite frankly. I mean, we had the dot-com crash that took, you know, stuff with them, you know, 9/11. And then we had 2008. That was brutal.
When did it happen? I'm fuzzy on my memory. It probably was, when did all those Canadian REITs kind of blow up? The oil REITs and so forth, and they were in this country. We have REITs, which are real estate investment trusts, and I don't want to go a whole explanation for those things. But by and large, what's the deal there, Frank? They don't pay taxes if they flow a certain percentage through in dividends. So they flow through about 85-90%. I should be exact on this, but I'm not trying to get you to buy one because I don't think I've ever sold one. But by and large, but the Canadian ones were really interesting because. I would have clients call up, and they'd always ask me about them. And I'd say, I don't understand them, so I'm not going to recommend them. What do you mean you don't understand them? I said, somehow along the line, I mean, from my accounting work here and so forth in this country, if you pay a dividend, by and large, I don't know how you get away with it on an individual year, Frank, if you have a bad year. If General Motors has a crummy year, they can still pay their dividend. I'm talking about the old GM or IBM or something. But by and large, your dividend has to come out of current earnings, correct? Where in Canada somehow you'd see these oil REITs, and the stock's trading for 22 and the dividend's $3. You know, and then you'd look at their income statement and they're making, you know, 88 cents. And you're sitting there going, wait a minute, 88 cents doesn't equal $3. Where's it coming from? So somehow or another, the rules up there must be you can pay out a cash flow or you can somehow kick back the depletion allowance and maybe sell it. There must be more to it. And I never understood it. So I said, I know it's paying it. But I don't know how they're paying it because it looks to me. So if you're asking me, I would not really recommend it because it looks like one of these days, the 88 cents you're making doesn't equal the $3 you're paying. That would just be me. So I go to this seminar in Arizona. In Arizona, those guys, those old dudes down there, Frank, they will, if there's a dividend stock in outer Zimbabwe, they'll find it. So I was in a group with 100 people, and I bet 85 of these people had this Canadian stock that blew up the week before. They went trading 22, cut their dividend from $3 to 30 cents, and the stock dropped to $3 in one day. And it wasn't coming back. And I'll bet the entire room, except for a couple guys, had it. I mean, people find this stuff. So you got to be careful, because if it looks too good, it probably is. I mean, am I wrong on that or what? I mean, so...
But that's one of the facts of trading.
Yeah. It's... We come back, Frank, let's talk a little about this Huawei thing. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like this, where a big company like that, allegedly with patents and everything, gets in the middle of this crossfire. And I don't think we're backing down on these guys. It doesn't look so hot. We got S&P futures down 16, Dow futures down 115, NASDAQ futures 8. And like I said, we were up until a couple hours ago. We got oil up another 23 cents. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. It's Matt Weber on the board with his assistant, Jack. S&P futures down 15 and a quarter. We were up last night, and now we're not. NASDAQ futures were down 86. That's a big number. And we've got Dow futures down 122. A lot of this has to do with we're continuing to push on this Huawei. I think these guys are a little more involved in this country in terms of patents and everything else, and that's what I hear. I don't know what that even means, but it just seems a little... We're pushing on this. I'm not so sure we're on good solid ground by doing it, but it appears we are anyway. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 186 now. It's 1.5%. Again, these guys hung in there pretty well last week, and now today they're kind of giving it up. FTSE down 69. That's 0.1. That is a whole 1%. CAC around down 79, 1.4. So whack in Europe. Nikkei up 51. So that's at 0.2%. Shanghai down 11.4. Hang Seng down 158.6%. So there's more actually going down in Europe on the way down than anywhere else. Oil up 16 cents, 62.92, still hanging around that 63 number. Brent up 27, 72.48. Natural gas 267, up a little bit from where David said to buy it at like 258. RBOB 204. I got gas this weekend 295, but I had to hunt around to do it. Stuff in Indiana was actually 305, 309, which is higher. Gold up a dime, 1275, so not much going on there. Silver unchanged at $14. Who's ever doing traffic weather sports? Traffic weather sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one issue in the area right now as we're off to a pretty good start. It looks like a disabled vehicle on I-90 westbound at Roselle Road, northwestern suburbs, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. But no issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower starting to build, but no accidents or issues to report. Same with the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Weather today, another cloudy, cold one. It seems like we have a couple of nice days in a row, and then it always goes back to cloudy and cold. No different today. A high of just 52, which is right near where we're at right now. It's overcast and 51 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 52. For our Phoenix listeners, a nice mild day down in the Valley of the Sun. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 74. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 63. In sports, Cubs won 2 of 3 in Washington, beating the Nationals last night 6-5. Javier Baez left the game with some sort of tweak in his foot or ankle. We'll learn more about that today. Not expected to be serious, but he did lead the game in that one. But again, Cubs take 2 of 3, beating the Nats 6-5. White Sox lost at home to Toronto 5-2. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 3-2. So as we take our Monday morning look at the MLB standings, the White Sox are 21-24. Third place in the AL Central. 8.5 back of first place Minnesota.
They're playing way better.
They are playing better. The Cubs are 27-17, 10 games over 500, a game and a half up on the Brewers as the Cubs are in first place in the NL Central, 4 games up on the Brewers in the loss column though. And the Diamondbacks are not playing great of late, but they're still in second place in the NL West. They're 5.5 back of the first place Dodgers, 25-22 overall. Lastly, Brooks Koepka hung on to win the PGA Championship yesterday, his fourth major already. He shot 8-under for the weekend, 2 shots ahead of Dustin Johnson.
For all the great golfers we've had, did he say golfer? Gopher? We've never had a guy with consecutive wins in 2 of the majors ever. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
at the same time. Doesn't he need anyone the last two U.S. Opens, too, or not? Oh, yeah, because the U.S. Open's not until June now, right?
Right.
Why did they move the PGA to May?
I don't know.
Very strange. Anyway.
It has to be money.
Well, there's got to be something about it, yeah. Hey, Frank, we talked a little bit about the plight of the retail investor, not the plight, they're doing pretty well forever. It is amazing to me. I mean, I talk on the air all the time. Matter of fact, I have a couple of new interviews with some new clients today, and a couple of them are, shall we say, have never had money before. All of a sudden, they've got dough coming from somewhere. Somebody left them some or whatever the deal is. I don't know. I'll find out more when I meet them. It is for you to say, I can't have any money, the banks aren't paying anything, blah, 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 blah. That's true. And I'm going to say that, unfortunately, if you drop your money with us, RBC is not paying hardly anything. That's one of our clearing arrangements, because most firms are not. IB is doing somewhat better. I'm going to say 1.5%, Frank, 175, something.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing a little bit. But look at your Treasury yield curve. And this is what PTI would do for you. And I would, as one of the groups this week, I think they're so incredibly conservative, Frank. I'm going to say, look, I'm not asking you to put money in stock or doing anything. You know what you can get in a 2-month T-bill right now? Even you don't know. I'm surprised.
Nope. Two in the orders?
240. Here's your Treasury yield curve is 1 month. I mean, we're not inverted. Thank God for the 20, but we are. I don't think I've ever seen one that looks like this, Frank. This looks like a, well, it's not a humpback. It's what's the opposite of a humpback? Smiley face? Here's the 1 month 2.39, 2 month 2.4, 3 month 2.39. The highest one up in the chain here is 2.42. So we can go get you a 6 month T-bill for 2.42. So if you decide you want to lighten up on your stock portfolio, you know what? 6 months isn't very long. Neither is 2 months. Go get you one of these things. Go right to the auction. Get you one. And, it's not 2.0. You know, it's not 3 or 2.75 like maybe traditional T-bills might have been. It's not that far off, Frank. I mean, we're talking 2.5 almost. So the idea that you can't get any money, anything on free cash is wrong. It's flat out wrong. So if your broker tells you that, it's because he's too damn lazy to go get you one at the Treasury. Well, actually, I think you probably do yourself online, right? I mean, but most people rather guys do right in their accounts, what stays in their account. it's not like we charge very much for it. So it's, I mean, the idea that you can't lighten up here, I'm not telling anybody to do it or not do it. I'm just saying the idea that you can't, that was a year ago argument. You know, or 2 years ago, and that number might have been what? 1? Now it's not. It's 2.4. 2.42. Just saying. So, there you have it.
Yeah, the 1 year is 2.3.
Well, 3 years, 2.15. Talk about if you had a railroad card, it looked like this, you'd say it had negative camber. It had sway back. you don't get all this, Frank. You don't get past the 6 month rate until you get out to 20 years is 2.3. 10 years is 2.39, and 6 months is 2.42. This is nuts. That's crazy. 30 years 2.82. Why would you ever give anybody money for 30 years for 2.82? Just saying. So what do you make of I listened to a lot of candidates yesterday on Face the Nation and the other ones. Election's kind of wild. It is interesting how everybody's staking out their ground and the different programs, and you listen to the different people, and they all make a lot of sense on two or three subjects, and then they kind of drop off on one or the other, and you say, where are they coming with that one? I was talking to Maddie on the way in about it. He's a big Bernie Sanders fan. And I like Bernie. I don't know if I'd vote for him ever, but I don't get where these are smart people, all these people. They're not dummies to get in these spots. And people say these guys are idiots. They're not. I mean, even what's her name? The little loud lady from New York. She's not a dummy. I mean, you don't get there at that age by being a dummy. I mean, you have to give people their due. And, but how does, where in Bernie's experience, and the guy's light years older than me, everybody looks at the current situation with healthcare and sees it's incredibly bloated, It's incredibly concentrated. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of brains to see that. But I don't get, Frank, how people. I mean, if you know, I'm the king, which I'm not, and you were my king, my second king. We'd be the consuls in Rome. Remember, they had the two kings or two consuls, two guys ran it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for somebody to come and say, "Boy, this healthcare is way too costly. It's way too this, way too that." You and I are be sitting there going, "Bravo, bravo, bravo." But then when somebody gets to the punchline, well, if only the government took it over, it'd be better. Somehow or another, that's not, and I'm certainly not going to compare Bernie Sanders to Hitler. I would never do that. But the way people market stuff is the same no matter who you are. And if you ever listened or read in English German, if you don't know how to read German, but I don't, a Hitler speech, and you saw one delivered. Most of the story is 90% fact, and then when you get to the end, the conclusion is just this reach. I mean, obviously, Hitler's conclusion was war and world domination and God knows what else. But all the stuff along the way probably made some sense. I mean, Germany didn't have any oil, didn't have this, didn't have that, you know, blah, 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 whatever. You know, they were being trapped by the Versailles Treaty, which they were. Anyway, all kinds of true stuff until you get to the bottom line, and then the leap of faith there is the problem. You know, and it helps if you're doing it in a beer hall and everybody's drunk, but Bernie's not doing it. He's doing it on Sunday TV. But the idea that the medical thing is totally bleeped up, that's 90% fact, 95. I mean, it is, right? There are some spots that Kevin always talks about in certain areas where there is some, community, what do you call them? First care centers, those kinds of things, that are actually turning out to be now very, very competitive, and there is some solution starting to percolate within the area that you could keep your eye on. Which that's what I would focus on. But now Bernie's suggestion is, okay, it's all bleeped up. Let's just have the government take over. And I'm going to say, whoa, Bernie, let me get this straight. We've taken over and given to one company. People's gas. We've done that to Commonwealth Edison. Are they any more efficient than the medical community? Or do they rape and pillage just as much?
Commonwealth Edison is not Commonwealth Edison anymore. It's Enron.
Well, whatever. I mean, you know, same creatures, same thing.
Right.
So what I'm saying is the solution is what I don't quite get. You know, I mean, why would a government takeover necessarily be any better? I mean, they point to Medicare, and Medicare is okay as long as it's a small piece, but are you getting rid of every insurance company? And my answer might be yes, but, you know, it's like, we have all these problems in the world. If you're a Republican, let's just cut everybody's taxes. Okay. There's a thought. I don't know if it's a solution for hemorrhoids. I mean, but I mean, they seem to think it is. You know, what I'm saying is, we're hearing all these different things that are wrong. And yet the solution seems very poorly thought out. And a lot of people's, or is that just me being old and grumpy?
Yes and yes. I'm old and grumpy too. Well, I want to see how they do on drug prices first. Let's start with that specific problem.
Well, now that's a, boy, are you talking about
something that's gone from 280 for 90 days up to approaching 40.
Let's,
and it's a generic.
You know what, Frank? Maybe we'll pick that up during the week, because I think I have a guest coming in that's going to talk about that either this week or next, and maybe you come on with him, and we'll talk about the drug stuff. Thanks, buddy. S&P futures down 16.25 now. NASDAQ futures down 93. They're leaking even more. Down by 130. We'll be right back. Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now. Money, honey. Money, honey. Money, honey. If you want to get along with me.
Well, we're back, Stocks and Jocks. Well, time out. Mr. Matt Weber and gang on the board. S&P futures down 16 now. NASDAQ futures down 92. Again, last night as I watched the Cubs win and I checked the markets, and up at 9 or 10. Maybe we'll have a quiet night. We'll talk about some nice, easy stuff the next morning, and all of a sudden, here we go down the rat hole again. Carl, you with us, buddy?
I am.
We've had a turn in the market here. Hey, I want to talk to you about two or three things, because actually my list of things to talk to you about is probably, you know, from here to England, but still. I am curious. I know that without casting any rumors or any telling things out of school, that you have had a interesting career in some of the, shall we say, high tech market, and I won't say where or how. But what is the full story on this Huawei guys? I can't find it anywhere. I can't read it. I can't. You know, I have a lot of other guests that are pretty darn good, but I'm thinking this is a Carl question. What is the deal with these guys? And by the way, I have a couple of clients that have called me and said, "Chief, listeners of the show, be careful, because these guys got an awful lot of the patents on 5G, and what are we going to do if we boot them all out? How the hell is that going to work?"
Let's deal with the patent thing first, because it's the easier and the shorter one. China doesn't seem to care about our intellectual property. Why would we care about theirs? That's the end of that discussion. As far as I'm concerned, they can stuff it. And by the way, Huawei is not a private company. Okay, they're not a Texas Instruments.
Okay.
They are for all intents and purposes, as are essentially all large firms in China, part of the PRC, which means they are part of the communist government, period. They operate with the permission of and at the direction of the PRC.
I'm not going to go libertarian on here because I'm not one of those guys, but are we really much different than that from when we let like a Google run the whole place?
Well, okay, in practice, to a significant extent, no, we're not, and that needs to stop. But, you know, the old thing about if we start playing tit for tat and because you did an evil thing, I get to do one too, we pretty much, where we end with there is with a smoking crater where there used to be a country. So, let's not go down that road. However, there is a real problem here for Huawei. And it's extremely serious, and it just popped up. And I kind of expected this was going to happen, and that is that the bar that has now been put out there on them, and it's legitimate. These companies in China, not just Huawei, but others, have been caught sticking backdoors and spyware into their equipment and into their software loads. And using it, by the way. And they're not the only ones, but this is a Chinese thing. The bar, however, has now led Google to yank any access to the Play Store and the Google pieces of Android from future Huawei handsets. What this essentially means is that now inside China, nobody's going to care because Google is barred from being on those handsets in China. In other words, the Chinese government will not allow you to have YouTube on your cell phone in China. It's illegal. Alright? So before we start screaming about free market capitalism and everything else, they have not allowed that, like, forever.
Alright, let's back up a bit. I'm sorry for being, this is like anal Monday for me. Let's back up to the patent piece.
Yeah.
I, for one, as you know, I'm not, I mean, you've been enough of me enough to know, I take this whole patent thing's messed up to start with, so I'm not going to go with, you're not going to get a debate out of me on that, but let's say, for instance, that they have, pick a number, 40% of all the patents that everybody needs to do to run, I think it's probably way too high, but let's say 40% for purpose of argument, to run 5G. I don't give a rat's behind about Huawei, and if they're over here, you know, the Chinese, I've seen Chinese that were here as a guest in my office stick those little, whatever you call the things, the things that steal stuff out of you, the little piece of thing that can steal stuff out of your computer, I don't know the name of them.
A little USB stick.
I'm talking about the little, the things you go buy and you stick them in there and you can walk them in your pocket and take, anyway.
Yeah.
These guys are sticking them in a computer in the office and I'm like, well, wait, we don't do that in this country. What are you guys doing? I get that part. But I'm saying, we still are a place that allegedly is rule of law, depending on who happens to be in government at the time here. I mean, what is the mechanism? We want to have 5G here. Now, Huawei's got 40% of the patents that are needed to be 5G. Are we going to secretly, you know, tell Nancy Pelosi or Trump's best confidant at Google, go ahead and use the patents, you know, knock yourself out? Or are we going to have a blanket announcement saying these patents are no longer valid, even though, I mean, is there no process? Is there some way? Do a few people get to use them? Do everybody get to use them? Does nobody get to use them until you're caught? What is our process for stripping these guys, who in my mind should have them in the first place? How do we somehow strip them from them and distribute them to other people? Secretly, like we normally do if you pay off enough? We're going to let everybody know they're just no good anymore? Are we going to make it official to piss the Chinese off even more? I mean, I guess what I'm saying, Carl, because we are a rule of law place, what is the mechanism here? Just a few guys that are in the know get to use them, or what?
Well, I don't know, but I am a hardcore skeptic that without those patents, you can't do 5G in the United States. I don't buy it.
All right, well, roll with me for a second. I'm just saying, suppose a few of them make it easier. What is the method? A few places just are in the know get to use them, and the other people can't. I mean, we're getting pretty messed up.
No, I think the mechanism is you declare it void. You know, look, it's time that we stop playing around with people that think that running into your house, sticking a gun in your nose, and robbing you is something that means that we just have to sit back and take it.
All right, and this has been going on for so long. I mean, you know, look, the Chinese during the time that Clinton was in office stole the W-88 nuclear warhead design from us.
Well, I get it.
All right, and so you know what? I am tired of people telling me that we should be on our high horse and get all sanctimonious with me about intellectual property when it comes to stuff that they have over there. The fact of the matter is that there's essentially nothing that the Chinese have actually invented out of whole cloth and patented on their own without stealing the predicates from somebody else first. And that's the way they've grown their economy. It's an embedded part of their business model. It's not some random one-off that some company does because they want an advantage over somebody else. It's part of how the entire nation's business model structure.
Well, first of all, I absolutely will not argue because I've told you this before, my mother's cousin went over there right after Kissinger and they wanted to buy one of every piece of their mining machinery.
Yeah!
but you know what though? What you're talking about, this is not just Chinese humanism. It's our humanism. How many people here have invented things that other people didn't steal anyway? I mean, Microsoft. What did they ever make that they didn't take from somebody else?
Well, it's you know, again, I'm not going to defend you know the Microsoft mess and you know now the Google and Facebook and I mean, you know, there's a list that's so long.
But I have to believe, Carl, that if you and I could go back in time, we'd find some caveman inventing this thing called the wheel and had no idea how to use it. And you and I walk in and go, "Wow, that thing could be useful." this is not new, right? I mean, it
isn't. And you know, one of the things. I mean, it's kind of interesting because during this, you know, in the context of this whole 5G thing and networks, back when I was running MCSNet. We recognized that the dial-up era was going to end, that we, you know, and then we were essentially looking at, okay, how do we avoid an existential threat that is coming from the fact that monopolists, the cable companies specifically, are going to end up essentially owning the entrance into your house. Which, by the way, is ultimately going to put all the guys that are using modems and ISDN and everything else, it's going to put us all out of business. And how are we going to address this? And the Wall Street answer came in the form of three firms, Covad, Northpoint, and Rhythms, all of which were doing DSL. Every piece of analysis that I ran on those firms said those companies are all going to go bankrupt, and if I partner with one of them, it's going to screw my customers and probably going to put me out of business at the same time. So I can't go down that road. So what road is there? And what we were working on was a little skunk project. Was a wireless mesh network that ran on unlicensed spectrum. So you'd buy a box, plug it in, and it would establish itself as, you know, as your endpoint. We couldn't get it to work, not due to the radio side of things, but due to the fact that you just couldn't reasonably come up with the processing power and memory necessary to make it functional. And by my figuring, even though we could have patented the algorithms and everything, it wouldn't have done me any good because I didn't believe that we would be able to get to where we could put that into a machine that you could buy at a reasonable price before the patent ran out. So patenting it was worthless.
Right.
So we never pursued it. You know, so I mean, there's this kind of thing. The whole concept behind patent protection is that you get a limited monopoly with some constraints for a limited period of time, and the reason we do that is to incentivize you to invent things. And after that time runs out, then everybody gets it, without even paying anybody anything. Alright? And that's the entire purpose behind that. It gives you an incentive to do it because you get a very short-term monopoly that you get to use for a while, and then everybody else gets to basically, quote-unquote, steal it.
Yeah, but it's 17 years. It's a ways.
It is, but you know what? There's things that don't get patented that don't end up on the market because today we can dream them, we can invent them, but they're not practical to build,
right.
And given the march of technology, we don't believe that you're going to get, you know, you're not going to get more than, what, 2-3 years out of it before the patent runs out. And if you sit on it, maybe you'll get lucky and somebody else won't come up with it, and as the time approaches that you can actually make it work, then you can file it. But once you file it, the clock starts to run, right? So there's some gaming that goes on here, but I am not, I am just not convinced that when it comes to Huawei, that there is an existential set of patents they hold that are necessary for us to have 5G in the United States. I don't buy it.
Okay. I was hoping you'd say that, by the way.
That's it.
I was hoping you'd say that. Hey, the thing that troubles me about this, like I said, you know, man, you've been on forever. I know because of what happened to my cousin over there and what happened to me in my own office. I don't really trust these guys. It's not like I have this, you know, bad thing against China. I mean, I don't, but I don't their way of doing business is just different than ours. And I don't necessarily like it all that much. Or this way, it's different than the way I would run our business here. Although we have a million crooks in this country too. It's not, but this whole mess that the president is diving into, him and his boys, it seems odd to me, Carl, because these guys possess this gateway, and it comes down to corruption, it comes down to everything. Because, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I had it wasn't a listener or whatever it was, somebody calls me up, this is years ago, and they say, well, you know, I'm thinking I have this big plant, and you know a lot of people, and at the time I was on the Economic Club of Chicago, and so you know all these people, and well, I don't know if I do or I don't, but it just so happened, the night before I talked to somebody who worked at the Chinese consulate. Out of the blue, Carl. Otherwise, I would have said, what are you calling me for? But it's just one of those things. I just talked to a guy in the Cubs last night. I could call a guy. That's everything, but it wasn't the Cubs. It was a Chinese consulate. So I call over there, and I get the guy. And he goes, yeah, you know, if somebody wants to bring a place over here, I'd advise you to, you know, we'll go out, we'll grab a drink, we'll do something, and I'll meet the guy, and we'll figure out what he wants to do, how big the place might be. And, oh, by the way, you know, we'll figure out what province he should be in, and we'll set him up with some people over there. And he didn't tell me this, and the more I dug into it, you essentially get your guy over there that is essentially a politician, for lack of a better term, even though he probably never had to run for office like you do here. And he meanders you in the Guangdong province or someplace, finds you a spot, hooks you up with the local people, maybe even gets the place built for you. Now they're going to want 50% of your place, and this guy makes a fortune on it, the guy you're talking to. Your enabler, for lack of a better term. That's what they call them in Mexico. Your enabler. And by the way, they keep their thumb on the neck of every employee over there, so they never strike or never do anything. So this is an arm's length transaction that our people are doing. And only if you're a fool, I pity the fool, as Mr. Weber used to say, you obviously are picking up along the way that what you're giving up for your 0.5% of this thing, half of the company, is somebody over there who's going to essentially make sure you never have any problems, that the only guy making the dough is going to be... I mean, this is... And you make the determination, should I do this to sell Carl's copiers? And if the answer is for Carl, the answer is yes. Now we're somehow coming down on not you necessarily for making this determination, but the Chinese side, they shouldn't be able to ask Carl for that. Well, Carl just agreed to the deal. You think it... By the way, it's worth it for you. We get this straight.
Well,
you know.
Except you got to be careful here, because the assumption is that once you have this deal, it ends up being something much like Darth Vader, where he comes in and he says, you know, hey, I just renegotiated this agreement. Pray I don't do it again.
Oh, I get it.
And you know, all you have to do is look at the case of Fellows, the paper shredder guys, right? Fellows got into a joint venture with the Chinese a number of years ago, probably 15, 20 years back. And you know, this was basically on the kind of arrangement that you're describing, right? You know, you need to work with us to be able to get your plant sited here and, you know, get the workers and, you know, do this and that. And oh, by the way, the government's kind of corrupt, so, you know, we can help you grease the skids and make sure that, you know, that nothing bad happens. Well, something bad did happen. They took all the designs and started cranking out counterfeit fellow shredders. And now the company was basically destroyed in terms of their American penetration.
Yeah, they're selling them back over here, probably.
Well, they are. Yeah, and the problem is that fellows, they made a huge stink about it. But the only place they could sue was in a Chinese court where, of course, they laughed at them.
Well, I don't... Here's I'm stumbling along here, Carl. I'm sorry if I am, but I'm picking out bits and pieces. But what I'm really trying to say is, we want the ice cream. We don't want the, you know, we don't want the carton. We want right. the Chinese to be able to, if you and I, I'm not going to say Trump's buddies, I mean, if anybody, we want to be able to sell our place to the Chinese for a number that nobody here would pay for. Yet we don't want them to get anything by doing. You can't be half in and half out. I mean, if we don't like them and we don't want them here, let's say we don't want them here. I mean, if the patents for whatever they have, the minimum amount you think they have or versus one of my other clients who claims that they're more, either way, I don't have a problem if the president walks out tomorrow. You know what? We never should have given them to him. Anybody wants them, they're yours. I have no problem with that. I don't like the fact, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on back and forth. We don't seem to mind if they buy Pebble Beach at a huge amount, and we cheer when they lose money on it. Obviously, the people they bought it from thought this was the best deal, you know, since heaven, right? So, I mean, we sort of want them in when they make mistakes. We don't want them out in when they don't make. I mean, it seems like there's no cohesive plan here. What if they're just no good, Nicks? Keep them the hell out. And oh, by the way, if there's 200 things we don't want them to have, put a list of the 200 things. And if Matt Weber gives them to him, Matt Weber goes to jail. We don't seem to be willing to do that either. I mean, we're just pontificating against the people that don't like foreigners or something. I mean, what are we really prepared to do? I don't see that in here. Do you, or am I missing something?
No, I think you've got a perfectly legitimate beef there, and it's been my opinion for a long time that we should have put a foot down on their neck and said, okay, this is going to stop. It's going to stop right now. And part of the reason we haven't done it is that we have run, we've had a series of administrations that believes that you can negotiate with these guys in good faith. You can come to some sort of arrangement. It'll be mutually beneficial for everybody, and everyone will go home happy. The reality is the Chinese are a communist nation. They have always been a communist nation. They've always been totalitarian in some form or fashion. Okay, it has never been different. It's been that way for thousands of years. They have the longest surviving. I mean, you know, yes, there have been changes in government over there, okay? I mean, you know, there is everywhere else. But the reality of it is that they do not look at arrangements and business deals and things like this the same way that America does, or for that matter, any other Western nation. They take very long-term views and look at what they want to accomplish 50, 100, 200, 1,000 years from now, and how to get there from here, and they don't care what they have to do in order to accomplish that. And we continue to think that there is some way that we can live in the world that we live in and do things the way we do things and ignore that, and it'll all be all right. And it's not true. It's never been true. You're now seeing a few people come around. I mean, even I saw an op-ed over the weekend by Gingrich that said I was dead wrong about this. And he was dead wrong about this, but there have been some folks, including myself, who have said, you know, for the last 20, 30 years, we're going to get hosed by this. These people are, you know, these guys are dealing cards off the bottom of the deck. If you don't start recognizing that and deal with it, there's going to be trouble.
Well, Carl, how do you? I see it from both ends here, and I'm starting to get some sort of a view because I've been trying to read about this stuff recently. Talk about crazy stuff to read. By the way, if you ever want to read a big hunk about it, and you probably read this, how difficult it is to deal with the group, shall we say. A little known, and I had no idea until I read his book, George Marshall, Soldier and Statesman. I didn't realize that between the end of World War II and the beginning of the Marshall Plan, George Marshall, hence the name, at Harry Truman's bidding, he spent, I'm going to say, pushing a year and a half, 2 years, I don't know if it was quite 2 years, but a long time over in China trying to negotiate a peace between Mao and Chiang Kai-shek. His writings on that, or whoever wrote the thing, God, what a circle bleep. I mean, both of those guys, they didn't care how many people died. He said it was the hardest thing. He finally called Truman. He said, I'm out of here. I'm not making any progress at all. And George Marshall was about as successful a guy at everything he did ever. And he's like, there's no, these guys don't know if they're running for a horseback. They don't want the same thing we want. They don't want to settle. Two things, Carl, and we've been talking about with the Iran situation and other things. American people seem to have, and again, obviously I'm one of us, and I'm a proud one of us, we seem to think that other people are like us. And by the way, they're not. I mean, the whole idea of a democratic society where if you lose the election, you actually leave and try and work harder next time so you win. So we did. The idea, the whole concept of the, what do they call it, the loyal opposition, you know, where you're in Congress with a minority, but you still try and do stuff because you're waiting for your, the whole idea, that is such a British, Northern European, you know, maybe Roman, type of thing. Well, I guess maybe it goes back to Greece a little bit. It's such a unique sort of thing. You can't just drop an election on somebody who doesn't have any idea what that is. Yet on the same token, I hear this criticism, and I had a pretty vigorous discussion with somebody the other night regarding, you know, John Kerry and the Iran situation. And the Iran situation was the same thing now with the bread. And I go back to the salt situation, the salt one. Or even if you and I are farmers somewhere and we hate each other. We don't have the same religion. We don't look the same. We don't dress the same. Somewhere, someday, it's worth it for us, even if we have the pitchforks at each other's throat, to say, you know what, Carl, I hate everything about you, but you look to me like you're one hell of a dairy farmer. And by the way, I know you hate the hell out of me, but I'm a pretty good hay grower. Just on this piece, how about I sell you some hay and you sell me some milk? And I still hate you and you still hate me. You might say, okay. And we have to understand that there's things like that. The SALT agreement didn't mean we liked Nikita Khrushchev or whoever the hell was who's the guy after him probably negotiated there. Wasn't Khrushchev. Who was the big ugly looking dude that was after Khrushchev? What the hell was his name? Boris, Yeltsin?
Yeltsin was.
After that. Anyway.
Yeltsin, yeah.
I forget who, you know, it's so long ago. I mean, somewhere along the line we said, look, even though most of these things are stuff we would get rid of anyway because they're so old the silo would probably blow up, we need to get some of them off the table, get rid of some of the warheads, even though they're useless to everybody and we still hate each other, let's get this rolling. Now, we never pushed on making sure we got to inspect everyone. We never let those guys over here inspecting every one of ours. But we at least showed the two places that had the pitchfork at each other's neck could make, quote, a deal. And it led to, several years later, SALT II. And eventually, we outweighed them and the place fell apart. So it was a terrific strategy on our part. And the thing about this Kerry thing, the amount of people will tell me, Carl, well, yeah, but Iran guys are still bleeps. I never thought they weren't bleeps. The point is, on this particular case, can we come to a deal to where you guys slow down on this and we lighten up on some of this, and maybe in this one narrow little area, we have something going so we don't blow each other up. And the idea that they continue to do all their other nasty things, why does that surprise people, Carl? We never
well, no, it shouldn't. And one of the things that's especially interesting about the whole Iranian deal is that we claim to have such great strategic interest. Well, the truth is that we really don't. Our strategic interest used to be primarily a petroleum predicated interest, which we don't need so much anymore. I mean, you know, whether you believe that fracking is going to continue to work out for us or not, the fact is that today, you could shut all that stuff off from a standpoint of U.S. trade and it wouldn't do much. Would it upset futures traders? Well, yeah.
U.S. trade.
You know, would it?
I got to push back on that.
Would it lead to a 1970s style gas line situation? The answer is no.
Well, but I think we've been lulled into this idea that we make enough oil for ourselves. No, we don't. But there's 20 people in the world that produce oil. And if all of a sudden Saudi cut us off, guess what? Some of it would still get here, and there's all kinds of other people. I mean, you're right. The world market is different, but we got people that are fighting the last war, Carl. I mean,
the thing is that what's driving a lot of the stuff in the Middle East, and what a lot of people don't understand, is it's not oil. It's natural gas. Because gas, while it can be transported by ship, LNG tankers and stuff, it's expensive and uneconomic and doesn't make sense. And guess who has a very large interest in seeing things like Nord Stream, keep going? And that would be the Russians.
Oh, yeah.
So do we really want to poke that, you know? And the answer is, what's our reason for doing it, okay? And by the way, this latest thing with KSA, you know, Saudi Arabia has some tankers and some pipelines that are tampered with, and they claim Iran did it. They don't have any proof, but they claim that they believe Iran did it. And the next thing out of their mouth is, oh, you guys over in the U.S., you ought to go bomb somebody.
Yeah.
All right? My answer to them is, go blankety-blank a goat. Okay?
Yeah.
You've got a problem with people blowing things up in your own territory? You go bomb somebody.
Well, they already are doing their worst down in Yemen.
Well, I understand that, but you know what? Why is it our problem? They didn't attack us.
Well, on the one hand, it is amazing. I mean, the shift, and again, I'm not going to constantly criticize, well, I don't think I am, but anyway, with the president from saying you guys aren't paying your fair share or you guys should have your own armies. But I'm going to say, Carl, since the end of World War II, the last thing we wanted is all these people to have their own armies. We were more than willing to pick up more than our share of the cost, so we never had to fight anybody. It was cheaper than having another war, right?
Well, you're right. I mean, there are benefits. Believe it or not, although I'll take some heat for this, there are benefits to hegemony. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we sit there and say, do we really want every other country in the world we may like for a while and not like for a while, they have two or three aircraft carriers like ours? I think the answer is no. We want to have them all.
Well, I think the bigger issue is how many people do we want to come up with boxes full of canned sunshine that they threaten to use on people?
Well, that's another. I mean, but the delivery systems.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think there's more to that than meets the eye. But I don't. How do you get a little dirty? I mean, I can remember in my lifetime where we had the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, right? Where
how's that worked out for us? Well, I mean, it's kept us from having a nuclear war.
Yeah,
but at what cost?
Well, but it also, I mean, I am no fan of the mullahs in Iran. I think they obviously beat the crap out of their own people, which I don't like. And you know, they're a dictatorial group. They use religion as a sword. Although people have used religion as a sword, they've used hatred for other people as a sword. They've used whatever to stay in power. I mean, people use whatever to do that. It all comes to the same place. But the idea is, they look. If I put my mind in their mind, like you know Vito Corleone would, they look at this. Wait a minute, these guys had this nuclear non-proliferation treaty. And of course, everybody who had nukes, whether they were good people or bad people, Russia, China, they get in there and they say, okay, nobody else gets to have them. Yet now we seem to think, is there anybody dumb enough to think Israel doesn't have them? We know Pakistan has them. We know India has them. And now we've got, if you look at a map, you see Iran, bad guys that they are, absolutely surrounded by everybody with nukes and they don't have any. Now, I don't want them to have them. Okay. The last thing I want is one of these guys with a nuke. Yet, from their point of view, who's telling us we can't have them? We're surrounded. Everybody's got them.
Well, it's not just that. You have to look at what happened when Gaddafi said, okay, I'll give mine up.
Yeah.
Okay? And look what happened to me.
Gaddafi
personally, look what happened to him. So, I mean, if you believe that we are, you know, some grand keeper of the peace and such like that, well, yeah, only if we like you. And the day that we don't, all of a sudden that changes and,
right.
You know, your head's on a pike. So I think there's a real problem with the, you know, the sort of gunboat diplomacy kind of approach. And I don't like it on, you know, on just straight moral and ethical grounds. But from a practical point of view, I think in today's world, it doesn't work very well.
Well, I'm going to get back a little bit, Carl, to the hacking and so forth that seems to be coming from all these other places. I live in an area in Chicago where people seem to want information on everybody. I mean, idea that the toll road now has places off the toll road to track you and your transponder down when you're not even on the toll road, it's a never-ending expansion of what people seem to care about you. I mean, if they could put a camera in your can, they would. I mean, why, I have no idea, but they would. Now, as bad as I think the Chinese, again, I've had a history with those guys, so I know their thought process, at least a little bit in a small sample. I absolutely can't believe that we, and again, I'm not this libertarian, you know, just because we do bad stuff, everybody gets to jump on us. I'm not that kind of guy, but What are we doing getting information on all these other people? I got to believe that if we can't control our people here, our people, I mean Google and the rest of these people, trying to figure out everything. I buy a pair of underwear, where I'm liable to go next to buy the next pair. What do you think our people are doing in these developing areas? I mean, they've got to be all over
these
guys.
There's plenty of this that goes, you know, both ways. It's just, and this is one of the real difficulties, is that we have, in this country, we have ignored our own rules so often. And, you know, I write on it all the time, all right? I mean, you know, the rule of law is honored more in the breach and the observance in the United States these days. It has been for a long time. But there's a certain difference between corporations taking advantage of things like this to figure out, you know, where you're going to go buy your next pair of socks, right? And the government using it to essentially as a means of making sure that you vote the right way and that there's no dissent. And by the way, there are groups in this country, in the United States, that are trying to go down that road. And if you think they're not, you're sadly deluded, because you see this right now with this whole deplatforming thing. Say the wrong word and all of a sudden the hammer comes down, and it doesn't just extend to being thrown off Facebook. These people are now trying to attack your ability to get a bank account.
Right.
Okay, so if that's not communist, would you please explain to me what is?
Well, it's like somebody who burns a flag. I would never do that, but I also know it's somebody's right to do that. And yet people are trying to take that away from people. I mean, people don't want anybody else to have rights. I mean, it's funny, Carl, I get this guy, right, big client, and he calls in, and they just had the U.S. Open down at Olympia Fields, and I won't be too detailed here because people know what I'm talking about. And so I call one of my buddies who knows everybody. I said, hey, my client wants to get on Olympia Fields. Is there any way we can play it on? I know a guy. So sure enough, we get a time, down we go. And the guy we're guest of is a dude that was a priest over in Far East somewhere. And, you know, he's not a priest anymore. He's a golfer, and he, you know, a nice guy. So he starts talking to me, and, you know, a couple of drinks go down. And he starts telling me about, well, you know, the U.S. He goes, what do you think of the U.S.? And I said, well, I mean, obviously I'm an American. I haven't been around too much in the world, but it seems to me like we got something going here that's kind of special and have had for a long time, although it's not without its multitude of warts. And we seem like we're making some progress sometimes. He goes, let me tell you, if you're overseas, the U.S. is like the worst people on earth. He goes, if you're here, it's the best country on earth. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, I was teaching economics in South Korea. And he goes, when you're overseas, all the government is an advanced arm of your biggest corporations, be it oil, be it General Motors at the time. He goes, that's all. He goes, I'm teaching economics in a South Korean school, university or someplace, and I get to the part about labor unions, and a CIA guy shows up and tells me, we don't want people here learning about labor unions. And I'm sitting there going, I don't think the guy's lying. I mean, how would you make something like that up?
And I'm he's probably not lying.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, is it really that bad that we're I mean, and then you read the, I mean, I read very small pieces of it, Carl. The British, what do they call that, where it was years later they came out with an assessment of the first Iraq war. And it never got much press here in this country. And I never wanted to read it, we had it from end to end for fear how pissed off I'd be. But it basically had to do with, you know, the Rumsfeld-Cheney group of the world. All they cared about over there was who's going to get the oil after we took over Iran. You know, this is Gulf War II. They didn't spend little time on who's going to govern the place after we outed Saddam. The British, it was a scathing report on them essentially listening to those guys and costing British lives, and now look at the mess we got in Iran. It didn't get much play here. We, of course, never are self-reflective here. But I'm sitting there going, it's so British to do that, to essentially go back and, you know, judge your own behavior. But I'm sitting there going, did we actually do that? That we had people that all they cared about was, not all they cared about, but spent a lot of time over who's going to get the oil afterward and not who's going to govern afterward. And I mean, did we really go down that road, like my country?
No, we went down that road. Look, I have long maintained that the original Iraq incursion by the United States was fully justified. Okay,
yeah.
That, you know, here's a nation that went into another country basically tried to seize it.
Yeah. Right. Not just the country, but
those guys called us up and said, we'd like some help.
Yeah.
Okay? You know what? If you do something like that, you deserve to get flattened. And there's plenty of people who say, well, you know, we kind of goaded Saddam on into doing it. And so what?
Yeah.
Okay? So what if we did? So what if we had a CIA asset over there that said, yeah, you know, if you do this, we're not going to do anything about it. Because at the end of the day, he could have said, you know, that's wrong, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Or he could have gone.
But that's not what he did.
Or he could have gone 10 miles,
The second time around was a different thing entirely. That kind of thing was a scam.
Yeah. I don't know how we don't have people tried for that, I mean, honestly, but, in courts. But anyway.
Well, Rumsfeld should have been hung for it.
Oh, he reminded me of the body counts in Vietnam. We only got a minute. Get a load of this. I'll be real brief. I'm sure you heard of those in your ute. I've never asked you how old you were, but I was at the tail end of the Vietnam thing. Lady who lives upstairs from me worked at a Walmart. I only got 30 seconds. And there was a guy in there who was kind of out there, for lack of a better term, but Walmart hires a lot of those people. She talked to him. He was a guy that actually, his job was to go out and identify pieces of bodies to figure out how many bodies were there, Carl. You think there's a reason why the guy was messed up? Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine having that job? I can't. Whatever. Carl, thank you very much. Spectacular as usual, buddy. SP Futures now down 21. NASDAQ down 106. Back and forth. But we're definitely back today, not fourth, at least so far. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks and jocks. Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right now. Right now.
Well, we'll back Stocks and Jocks. Half time out. Mr. David Animal in a second. We have Matt Weber and gang on the board. She loves me. She loves me not. Today, China says no rush to restart sales talk, trade talks. Spoo's up 9 last night, now down 23.75. NASDAQ futures down 115. She doesn't love me today, the trade talks. Dow futures down 135, so whack, whack, whack. Over in Europe, same thing. Actually worse now. DAX is down 188. That's 1.5%. They were down like 140 last time we looked. FTSE down 68.9%. A CAC around down at 87. That's 1.6. So not good news in the markets in Europe. Asia not so bad. I mean, Nikkei is up 51.2%. Shanghai is only down 11.4%. Hang Seng down 158, only 0.6. So not horrible, horrible there. Oil up 21 cents now. It was up a little more earlier. 62.97. Brent up 24, 72.45. So that spread is now $9.50. Which, you know, back up from the 750, but it's nowhere near the 1150 we've seen it at, so I guess it's right in the middle of that spread. We've got gold up $1.10 now, dollars, or 1276. It's right now between 1280 and 1300. Violent in that area, but doesn't seem to be able to break out sort of either way. I'm sorry, 1275 to 1300. Silver up, a whole pence, 1440. We've got copper 272, so not much going on there. What do you guys got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start, actually, on the area expressways, Chief. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy, though traffic is building steadily. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. But no accidents to report. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford have been behaving themselves all morning. Same with your suburban tollways. Off the expressways, we have a crash on the west side of the city. Looks like Harrison and Cicero. There is an accident. And then downtown Grand Ave at Franklin, there is a crash too. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds today. We cool off significantly compared to what we were this weekend. A high of just 52, which is right near where we're at right now. It's overcast and 51 degrees going downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a beautiful day. Sunshine with a high of 74. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 64. In sports, Cubs took 2 of 3 in Washington, beating the Nationals 6-5 last night. Javier Baez left the game with an ankle issue. He'll be reevaluated today, and we'll find out more on that. They return home for a four-game set against the Phillies beginning tonight. White Sox lost to the Blue Jays 5-2. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 3-2. And as we touched on a bit earlier, Brooks Koepka won the PGA Championship, his fourth major title. He shot 8-under for the weekend, 2 shots ahead of Dustin Johnson. By the way, Kevin wrote in on Twitter, you asked why the PGA was moved to May. He said the PGA was moved to May, so there is a major golf event every month. Includes the majors, Pebble Beach, the Players' Championship, and the playoffs in August.
So we've added a couple to the major championships.
Well, they're not officially majors, but there's a major golf event, not technically a major.
Now, there's another reason.
What's that? The
real reason was the PGA coming in August, it would conflict with either the Ryder's Cup or the President's Cup, and also the FedEx playoffs. So this way, they leave August open so that the players can take some time to get ready for those events.
That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, it does make sense. And you get a marquee event in May now.
Yep. So it's April, May, the U.S. Open, and the British Open's in July, right?
And the Players' Championship also, which is usually considered the fifth major.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, though. David, what was it, the Chinese saying no talk schedule to turn this around here, or there has to be an utterance someplace that somewhere between the time I went to bed and woke up happened?
You know, I think that's it, but you know, I think it's kind of the analysts taking apart, you know, Google's removal of the license of Huawei from Android and the ramifications, and Huawei coming back and saying, oh, we are working on our own operating system and, you know, chips, and we're not going to necessarily be, you know, beholden upon the U.S. or, you know, chip suppliers in Europe and Ericsson and the like for 5G, but most analysts say that's really not the case. This is going to hurt Huawei big time, and that's going to definitely enter into the trade situation.
Plus, a lot of people here supply them, right?
Yes.
I looked on my list, as I do every morning for the listeners, and those stocks that are moving. I had a, well, you were on, David, actually you weren't on Friday, but I had a big sort of mea culpa that I have more and more people asking me, what about Apple? And I'm going to say, David, out of all the questions that any clients or would-be clients that have ever asked me, I have no idea how to judge this Apple in the middle of this. They look like the church between the enemy lines, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be tough because on one hand you could say Apple will benefit because, you know, without Android there is no, you know, iOS operating system for Apple, and if they can't sell their cheaper lines of phones, then Apple's going to benefit. Also the fact that though Apple certainly is and could be a target of Chinese retaliation, you know, are they going to, when supposedly they employ hundreds of thousands, maybe some people say a million, you know, workers in China. So I don't really have the answer. If the answer is yes, they are a target, and China says you can't buy any more Apple iPhones, then, you know, or iPods or, you know, iPads or, you know, earbuds or the like, then obviously it's going to be devastating. So you can look on it both ways, and really, you know, they're, you know, like you said, they're caught between the rocket fire from both sides.
Well, and just so there's a little bit of a history here, on 11-1 2018, okay, which is you know, not that long ago, stock was 222. Call it 222. On January 3rd, it was $142. So that's $80 down. Okay. We go from there up to, the date would be 5-1 of this year. The high price was 215. And it closed that day at 210. So even if you had, if you want to sell at 215, you had to be quick like a bunny, as they say. And now we're down to, we're down $5 this morning. Back down to $1.83. So,
183.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 183. And so it's been for a, I'm going to say for a very large stable, well, I guess stable company, this price has been all over the place. Now, do I think that somehow on purpose the Chinese are going to screw essentially a million employees and all the people, I won't say getting paid off, benefiting from Apple's presence in the party and everybody else over there, are they going to turn around and stop that? I'm going to guess, unless they're told to, probably not.
Right.
And I don't think here we want to do anything to screw basically our most valuable company, or second or third, depending on the day. But what did Rumsfeld used to call it? Collateral damage, David?
Right. I mean, yeah, there's fallout. And, yeah. And even if Apple does, you know, kind of stay on a truce line, I mean, the other chip suppliers, I mean, NVIDIA's a little bit. Xilinx is big. That's why it's a great company, but it's taken a huge hit on anticipation that, you know, a lot of their semiconductors for 5G to Huawei are going to be cut off. And the other one is Qualcomm. So those are likely all to be under pressure, specifically Xilinx and Qualcomm.
But I just, on this particular one, David, I mean, whenever anybody asks you about a particular stock and where it's trading, first of all, every trade, and this is, it's hard to impress upon the gray matter of people that have been in the business. Every time you buy a stock, every time you sell a stock, you don't trade with the dumb market. You trade with another person.
Right.
And every time that you buy whatever, Bank America, and you think you've got this all figured out, I got this David guy that recommended it, and by the way, I checked it out with 15 newsletter guys, and it's on somebody.
And we
somebody
checked with Tom, and we put the collar on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I mean, we've checked. It's on Morgan's, you know, a list of stocks they like, and somebody. The simple fact is, the 100 shares you buy from somebody, and when you buy it from somebody, there's somebody on the other side of that trade that can't wait to sell his 100 shares.
Right.
For whatever reason, now how dumb that guy must be, because you've read all those articles and everything, and the only way for this thing to go is up. The fact is, there's another human being that just might be as smart as you or smarter than you on that day that's willing to sell it to you. So no matter what you think you're so sure of, I mean, right now, I honestly believe, and I hope I don't get any more calls like this, David, I have no idea to whether or not this thing gets worse with China, Apple somehow gets caught in the crosshairs and it's back down to 140, or somehow we declare a victory and this thing's done in 2 months and it goes back to 220. I have no idea, David, and I don't think anybody does. So,
no.
And if it goes one way or the other, somebody's going to say you should have known. Okay, let me on the team, let me in the Oval Office, let me in, probably better, let me in, I don't want to go over to China. Let's say, let me, whatever the office is over there, I don't know if it's Oval or whatever it is. I mean, I don't think the insiders even know at this point where this is going to land.
No. But I mean, the only, and it's a guess. I mean, I like many others, thought it was in the best interest. I mean, nobody, I don't think, wins a trade war. I really thought that some kind of a deal, I thought it would be watered down, but I thought it would be enough that both sides would be able to declare some sort of victory. They'd buy, you know, more of our natural gas and soybeans, and we'd, you know, say, hey, they opened up our markets and they stopped devaluing the yuan, and blah, blah, blah. I thought it'd be, if nothing else, a minor victory that maybe was already priced into the market. Who knows? But, you know, it was just in everyone's best interest. I was wrong. 90% of the people were wrong. And, you know, I hate to even venture a guess now, but, you know, now they're talking, you know, I think it's June 28th for the G20 in Tokyo, and Oshii and Trump are going to meet, and something, if nothing else, progress or reopen talks or whatever. It looks to me like this, especially with this slap against Huawei, I mean, it's, you know, and they were supposedly far ahead of us in 5G development. I have a feeling this is going to be protracted, and victories or tweets or announcements are going to be small, and setbacks are going to be larger. And that doesn't necessarily mean the market's, you know, definitely going to go down if it is protracted negotiations, you know, because I think the economy is still pretty good. And, you know, I think their earnings are better than expected, and revenues were substantially better than expected. So it doesn't necessarily, I'm not, you know, trying to wave a flag and say get short now, you know, sell everything. But as far as the trade thing, I don't see that there's going to be a real positive resolution for a while. Both sides seem to really be digging in.
Is the daughter still in jail, Canada?
I don't know the answer to that.
I think she is. I don't think she got out.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Interesting what you just said, your little monologue there, which, by the way, I happen to agree with, but I was reminded of, there's this lady on, she was a guest on CNBC, and I should remember these people's names. I'm going to say something about them. But she was very bright. Had her charts, David, like you. But I will say she looked a hell of a lot better than you. Just saying.
That doesn't say too much necessarily.
But actually, beyond, not that I noticed, exceptionally attractive. Whatever. So, but she was saying that you used the words, you kept using the past tense, that you would misjudge, that you had misjudged, that you had done this and that. She took what you just said, and I've listened to her before. She's not that often. Maybe she's on her once every 3-4 weeks. And the reason why I see her is she's on the same time that John and Pete usually on, right after them. And so I'm usually watching those guys, then up she pops. Anyway, so she says the thing that I have absolutely come to the conclusion of, and she's normally very, very bullish, works for some big operation that, you know, is looking for your money, so they're bullish.
Right.
And she goes, I'm just saying, I think the market continues to totally discount wrongly the idea that this really could get ugly. She goes, we're continuing to constantly, if you ask anybody who's in the market, they will tell you it's taken a little longer than we thought, but by the end of the month or 6 months or 2 months or pick a name, this is all going to end up okay. It's just long-term capital, a protracted, you know, any other crisis you and I have gone through since we've been in the market, David. And she goes, you know what? It just may not be that at all. It may just be a really long-term fight. It just gets worse and worse for like a real long period of time as people piss each other off even more. And she goes, and the market is still not priced that way. it's priced that one of these days we're going to get the announcement that everything's okay, because in our mind it's politically expedient for both sides to do that. And she goes, it's just not happening. And matter of fact, it's getting worse. And I, you know, I don't know that she's right or wrong or whatever. I can't remember her name, but it's a point of view that I really have not heard. I've been on the same side as you. I thought it was going to get a little uglier for a while, but I really thought the drop dead date was, really the first of the year, and that came and went.
Right.
And now here we're almost talking summer, and now we're talking about a June meeting. I'd have to say now the drop dead date is probably Labor Day, because that's roughly a year before people start campaigning for 2020. But am I totally wrong too?
I don't know the answer to that. And again, I would caution folks, longs and shorts, bullish and bearish, and even folks neutral, that, you know, that's not the only factor. We got, you know, this Iranian thing seems to be heating up, and then you have on the other side, you know, they were talking that, you know, if you look at the futures, if you look at the curve, if you look at the sentiment, you know, you speak to Fed, you know, governors and presidents and voting members and the like, that the market's pricing in, I think, something like a 50% chance of a rate cut in June. And I think September, they say it's up to about 75, 80, and that it's like 85 or 87% chance by the end of the year. So, you know, is the Fed going to take all the, whether it's stocks themselves or the trade issue or possibly a flare-up in Iran, are they going to take that into account in their rate, monetary and fiscal policy?
But that extends as well, David. The debate there is we have incredible amount of very intelligent people under the age of 40 that are absolutely convinced that no matter what happens, trade-wise, war-wise, you name it, as long as the Fed drops rates, the market's safe. And you and I have been around forever knowing that is not true at all.
If it's in response to, you know, whatever, just slowing conditions, their perception of inflation, which you and I, and I think people who are really knowledgeable know better, but that's the data that they're going on. That's one thing. But if it's just accommodation in there, or there really is big time slowing in the economy, which certainly is a possibility, as you know, as you say, damage from the trade issues and the like. There's a substantial slowing in the economy and slowing in corporate profits and everything else, then Fed lowering is just a reflection of bad times ahead.
Well, if you look at the, again, I'm not, no predicting whatever, but if you think that a huge rally took place in the market because of the tax decrease, if you think that, I don't necessarily think that that's what happened, but if that's what you think is the causative factor, I would say that I've read stuff this weekend that said that right now if the current tariffs, even if the part of the autos aren't put through, and oh, by the way, we cut the ones on the Canadian and Mexican.
Right.
So that actually went down this weekend, so I think that's a good thing. If you actually look at the tariff things, it said for most Americans, the tariff increases are going to be three times whatever tax decrease you got. So if you think for a second that the reason why, you know, the market went down is because every man got this money. They just took the money back from every man. I'm not saying we should go back down like in the market. Hey, but David, let's want to shift gears a little bit. In terms of the fabric of the market, I was asking, because I was getting man called on Friday, why are we like so volatile? And I was on Joan Esposito's show last week. And I said, you know, it's almost like whenever there's, you know, news to be had. I mean, all your option pricing models and everything, they assume the steady stream of information. Of course, anybody who's in the market knows it's never steady. It's very discrete. I mean, there's earnings, there's other stuff. Right before earnings, you're going to see anybody who tries to trade before earnings or before a Fed announcement not so much before the labor thing, but before a Fed announcement, you're going to see the market be very skittish. So if you want to run in and buy, you know, a bunch of spoos or sell them, probably you're going to have to pay up 10 points because somebody's going to say, well, who is that guy and why is he doing something a second before his stuff's coming out? It almost seems like we're on a permanent Fed watch situation where the market really is almost 20 points wide, David, if you really want to do some, or 10 for sure. If you came in with any kind of an order looking like you knew what you were doing, everybody just runs the other way. I mean, and I'm not so sure that we're just not in this, we're not in the same, like every day's earnings day or something. It seems weird to me, doesn't it? Or is it just me?
No, I tend to agree with you. I mean, and Pete Najarian, you know, has pointed out that, you know, forget the fact that options volume, you know, has exploded, you know, probably, and the layoffs to stocks, I think, are much smaller, but everything that's showing up are, not everything, but 80%, you know, on their unusual options activity and all this other stuff, it's all short term.
Yeah.
It's 3 days out, it's 10 days out. I mean, if they see something out to August, it's unusual that something's that far out. I mean, everything is short. Everyone seems to be, you know, paying up to buy these, you know, out-of-the-money calls for 20 cents or 30 cents. You know, nobody's putting on, you know, I shouldn't say nobody. Very, very, very few people are putting on a longer-dated option strategy, whether it's an outright or a spread.
Well, David, I actually have access to that feed, because I'm doing some work with those guys, and some of the stuff that was longer term, there was some longer tough stuff going down maybe a month ago, and some of these stocks, David, every single one, and that's maybe not every single one, but people got annihilated. One of this FCX, Freeport.
You're right.
The stock was like, I'm going to say 13, 14.
Right.
Somebody bought, thousands and thousands of like the January or September 16 calls. The thing's 10.
Right.
The people that bought the long-term calls when it looked like we were rallying about a month ago, they have, boy, talk about annihilation. I mean, these things are way below where you're talking about you need a 40% move to break even, for God's
right.
sake. I think the short-term stuff is, we had.
Well, you're not going to lose as much, but yeah. I think you're going to lose more often.
Well, we had
just because of the decay. If you're buying, you know, I'll just pick one up, Marvel, MRVL. You know, I mean, days and days and weeks, oh, we're buying the 23, they're buying the 23s, they're buying the 25s, they're only spend 30 cents, they're only spend 40 cents, whatever. Well, you know, it too, if you look up and it's, you know, $21, I mean, it's every time they're losing. They're losing the 30 cents and 50 cents, 30 cents and 50 cents. If you do that every couple of weeks, you're down a chunk.
Oh, yeah. Well, Marvel was day after day after day, like you're talking about, was one. Like I said, Pete was talking about it, and I had the feed, and they were every day they were buying these things. This was like a month ago.
Right. And they were on every day saying, hey, and all those are losers over a very short period of time. They've lost 100% each time.
Well, I put on a spread in the middle. Like, whatever these guys were buying were like June's. And I did like an April, because a month ago, we did pretty well on it. Matter of fact, Marvel's been one of my big winners this year, but because the stock did run up, and then as soon as
right.
we got our stuff off, it turned around right back down again.
Right.
I mean, if you're buying premium to the upside this year so far, a lot of people bought off a lot of apples when the stock was 215. A lot of the 220s went.
Right.
220s are a long way away from 183.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, I suppose it's better than if you bought the stock. You know, I mean, you always look at it that way, but chances are you probably wouldn't have bought as much stock. I mean,
exactly.
No, it is very difficult, and I just, you know, you start, this works its way through the economy. I mean, some of these articles, I mean, again, you know, you can't trade on the stuff you read. But last Monday, I was reporting, last Sunday, Goldman had a big article out talking about that the tariffs that the Chinese, in their opinion, have eaten a way less percentage of the tariffs than they thought. You know, they thought that, you know, early on, the predictions...
You mean they're not really writing the checks to the Treasury like Trump?
Well, not only that. I mean, I would have guessed... In other words, for every article that comes out, for every product, David, I mean, you and I, you know, we don't buy or sell every one of them, but, you know, we're around. We've been around for a while. I'm going to say between us and our other contributors to the show, if somebody were to say, okay, a tariff on... I'll use the one that I know about. Auto glass. I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, half, third, quarter comes from China. I don't know the exact number. The tariff was 10%. And I would have said by, you know, by my old economics graphs, you know, I would have said, I'll bet that the price here goes up 4, 5, 6% and the Chinese eat the rest. I would have been absolutely wrong. My guys in the industry tell me the next day they went up the full 10%.
Right.
So, and I think what Morgan was seeing some of that. They're saying,
and I wouldn't be surprised that in some cases they've gone up 20% to try and hedge for the next round.
Maybe. And so the winners are our guys, okay? Now, the losers are
the people.
The people, yeah. And if it turns out that the increased, you know, money goes to wages and so forth, and you happen to be working for one of the places, I guess it's okay for you. But there's got to be how many, a million products like that.
Right.
And every one of them is his own story. So you got to be careful when you're simple on this stuff, because it's really not simple.
No, it's not.
David, XP Futures now down 22.50. NASDAQ Futures down 118. We've come back from these before. I mean, it turns out it's all it takes a buyer today, and everybody get out of the way the other way. Again, Apple down 535 is a big mover here today. Boeing down 4. Those are the two big movers in the Dow, sending them down. But I only have a couple of stocks in the Dow that are up, Verizon being one of them, and a McDonald's being the other. So the rest of that, every other Dow stock is down from there. Every stock in the transportation that's now trading is down. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks. Matty, you and your gang, good job. Talk to everybody tomorrow.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.